I'd like to call the September 25th meeting of the Human Resources Committee to order. The first item on the agenda is approval of minutes dated August 21st, 2006.
So moved.
You and I and Chua Vang, who may join us later, are the committee. I second that. I have no changes. Do you have any changes or revisions? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motions are passed. I'm sorry, what? Not quite.
The spotlight.
Yeah, as long as that spotlight doesn't come on. Okay. Item two is public appearances. We have no public appearances. Item three is announcements. We have no announcements. Before we do item four, I want to remind us that the committee approved back on August 21st, and the board has subsequently approved a calendar for us, which, you know, we could deviate if a majority of the committee wants to, but if we followed it, it would mean tonight we have a presentation on the topic of the costs of current health insurance plans for employees. We have a meeting scheduled at the end of October where we can make recommendations if, as a committee, if we have any, and we'd also take up the new topic of reviewing how the district handles complaints with staff. So certainly, you know, if you want to go ahead and formulate recommendations tonight, you could. You don't need to. We have another meeting scheduled for that purpose. At this point, I would like to turn the microphone over to the Bobs, Bob Butler from the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, and Robert Nadler, Jr. From the MMSD HR committee, or I'm sorry, department. Following the items identified by the full board back in June as areas of concern, and health insurance costs and quality of coverage were high on that list, we've invited Mr. Butler to do a presentation called Addressing Health Insurance Issues. Mr. Butler has for many years been a negotiator for the Wisconsin Association for School Boards and has been at the table with Mr. Nadler, the superintendent, and others on behalf of the district. So it's a very welcome presentation. It's a difficult topic. I appreciate, you know, the background both of you have. And our speakers have told us that questions during the presentation are okay, so I will try and keep track. We have an hour and a half if we use it. We certainly have time for questions at the end, but if you have questions as we go along, Mr. Butler and Mr. Nadler are willing to take those. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ruth. It's really a pleasure to have Bob here tonight to present on this topic. Bob's very knowledgeable about negotiating in Wisconsin with school districts. He does numerous negotiations with school districts all over the state and has a really good grasp of the insurance issue that is current in Wisconsin. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Bob.
Thank you, Robert. Well, I'm going to focus on this PowerPoint presentation that all of you also received a hard copy on, but as Ms. Robarts commented, I would encourage questions throughout the presentation on things that are specific to your district. This presentation will both address statewide trends and trends within the school system yourself. So I've split the presentation in those kind of things, so throughout this you'll see slides that relate to both of those topics. Primarily this evening, I'm going to talk about this more from a more global perspective. It's not really addressing bargaining strategies and tactics per se, but giving examples of the problems that are out there, what school districts have done in cooperation with their unions, and making modifications in their health insurance plan. And the first thing that's often asked is, why address health insurance in a total compensation model? Total compensation is the methodology that's used for calculating teacher compensation packages. It's also used in, from the employer's viewpoint, in negotiating with support staffs, and it's required in our contracts with administrators as well. And so the first aspect is, why look at it in that aspect? Well, as you realize when you go through your budget deliberations, the significant impact that health insurance costs have had on your program offerings, facilities, and in an indirect manner on student achievement. And how that occurs is with things as staffing decisions that are made by the district, not just yours, but at others. It also has an impact on taxes and community support for education. We have had this issue brought up by groups who may be opposed to a referendum, citing the district's health insurance costs or the level of benefits that are provided to employees. And it's often a challenge to explain to community members the negotiations law, the impact of the qualified economic offer law, and how that relates to maintaining existing fringe benefits.
Just before you go on, you mentioned significant costs, and I think it'd be a good idea for us to be a little more specific. Newspapers have recently estimated that the employee health insurance costs for the Madison School District is in the range of $36 million or so, total, you know, which would be 10% roughly of our total budget, and even more, a larger percentage of that part of our budget that's controlled by revenue caps. Is that correct?
I think that's pretty roughly. Close.
Yes, close.
It's pretty
okay.
Close.
When we're talking about, you know, $36 million or so, you know, I'd have to agree with you that's significant, but I just wanted to be sure we're talking about the same kind of
numbers.
Yeah,
we are, yeah. And I'll give you some information both statewide and local as far as the cost of benefits that are provided within your budget. And that's not unusual to have a large amount of money going toward wages and compensation of employees because we are a personnel-driven industry. Staffing issues, as I alluded to, with the cost insurance districts have viewed various issues about class size, program offerings, et cetera, underneath the guise of how much does it cost for that fringe benefit for the employee if we hire him or her for that vocation. And labor market factors. Our complement of benefits, and when I say our, I'm talking about statewide issues, is different than you'll see in other states. We tend to be more benefit heavy than other districts when it comes to, or other states when it comes to how we split up our compensation dollar. The main issue, and Ms. Robards pointed out with this as far as the amount of money we're talking about, it really starts with staff and community education on this issue. And so when I talk about the effect on the district's budget, one thing that's interesting is the percentage of money that is spent on health insurance and fringe benefits. Statewide, that figure is about 26.1% of statewide budgets go to employee benefits. In Madison, for 05, the number was 25.9, so you are slightly below the statewide average for the cost on that. The disturbing element of this is if you look at the historical percentage of the district budget spent on health insurance, you'll see that the amount has been escalating considerably over time. And I sometimes use the analogy, it's like a Pac-Man that gets in your budget and starts eating things up at the expense of other items, because the rates of insurance are clearly much greater than the levels of increase we have in revenue for the school system. And then, as I alluded to earlier, the effect on staffing levels, many districts around the state have eliminated positions, particularly those with declining enrollment. Some of those in those circumstances have increased class size, reduced planning time, or added teaching overload. So it does affect the classroom. Several districts have created positions that don't qualify for health insurance benefits, which raises a lot of public policy concerns. But if a contract has a level that says that 19 hours you are eligible for health insurance, many employers are creating two part-time positions as opposed to one full-time to avoid the payment of health insurance costs and that additional expense. Districts have utilized outside vendors, whether it be transportation, food service, or in custodial services. And then the impact benefit costs have on wages. Obviously, if more money is going to benefit costs, less dollars are available to offer competitive salary and wage offers. And so in that respect is how we get to the last point, that it does result in a potential distortion of the labor market. And some of the things you may have seen recently, there was some media attention played to this, that Wisconsin ranks third in the country for the amount of money that we spend on benefit costs per pupil. Now, if you compare that to in 03-04, according to the American Federation of Teachers, we were 27th on average teacher salary for 03-04. Now, that is a trend that has been moving downward. As you see over the years, the state used to rank much better compared to other states in the country for how our teacher salaries were. Now, that's really two things that come into factor here. One is the qualified economic offer and how that law gives preference to benefits in its calculation over salary increases. And then secondarily has been the magnitude of benefit increases. At those third highest costs, we rank only behind New York and Indiana for the amount of money that we spend on benefits for employees. When you look at what we spend on salary per employee, we end up ranking 22nd on the salary amounts spent per employee, so that, or per pupil, which is different than the average salaries that I've given you. Now, how do our costs compare to the private sector? You may have seen information that talks about how health insurance costs in general for the state are higher than other states, and that is true, particularly if you're in the southeastern corridor. In Dane County, because of the number of health insurance providers, our health insurance costs are actually somewhat lower than the statewide average. But here's some data from the Wisconsin Hospitals Association that shows that the average private sector family health insurance premium is roughly $1,000 a month, and the average K-12 is $1,230. Now, the main reason behind that difference is because of the plan designs that are offered, and many of the K-12s are small groups. So in a small group, if you have broad freedom of choice and a healthy plan design, you're often going to have much higher premium costs. So the average K-12 premiums are roughly $2,000 more per year than that average private family plan. Now, as I alluded to, some of this is due to the plan design that is offered. And you'll see this from the Office of Commissioners of Insurance shows what's been happening to health insurance plan design in the state. This includes both public and private sector employers. And as you see, back in 1995, the mix-up of plan design was relatively even with indemnity and HMOs. Over the years, there's been a shift away from indemnity toward PPO, POS, and HMOs. Those acronyms basically, as you move from the left to the right, are you get into more managed care and less freedom of choice for the plan subscriber. So employers have reacted to the premium increases by tailoring plan design to basically go to more defined networks with less employee options for providers as a way to work on discount arrangements with those providers. Now, how do our plan increases compare to those in the state plan? It's another piece of information that often we heard a lot of dialogue about. In fact, there was a bill that passed the legislature in the last session, which was vetoed by the governor, which would have allowed boards to unilaterally move their employees into the state health insurance plan. This shows a comparison of the premium increases of the state plan compared to the K-12. The state plan, I didn't put the premium numbers in because it varies by county so drastically. If you happen to be up in Iron County, there aren't many plan design changes, so most of the employees up there are in a straight indemnity plan. If you're down in Dane County, you have a multitude of providers, whether it be Physicians Plus, Dean, GHC, et cetera, and so the premium numbers tend to be much lower. But again, from this, you can see the state health insurance increases have been less than the K-12.
Ms. Carstensen?
These are the year-to-year increases.
Could you use your mic?
Sorry. These are the year-to-year increases. What I would find a little more helpful in addition to this is the actual underlying data, in other words, what it looks like, because not to say that this is true, but if they were in a situation in which, say, the state health insurance was significantly greater, which I don't think it was, the relative increases don't tell us a whole lot about where we end up.
Yeah, the reason, and that's a valid question, the reason why I characterize it this way is because within the state plan, the amount paid varies by county. So some counties have a greater menu of health insurance options, and so in those counties, the premiums will be less. But as you move further north, to generalize, particularly up toward the border of the UP or up in the Superior area, you don't get as high of a premium. In general, for 2005, you were roughly looking at about $1,000 a month in Dane County would be the state contribution. It was roughly in that area. It would depend on the plan again. It could be anywhere from $950 to $1,050. But if you were up in Iron County, you're going to be looking at a much higher premium of $1,800 or so. So that's why it's characterized in this fashion. So for that data, we would have to get it by each individual school, and this is just comparing K-12 statewide.
but you could provide it for us for
absolutely.
The state in Dane County and Madison as, yes. as a comparison.
Yes. Yes, in fact, I have it here if you want it tonight because one of your sister school districts in the county, Monona Grove, is in the state health insurance plan, so I actually have their data for you. One of the other things that we've noted through the years is how this, if we take this hypothetical dollar we spend on employee compensation, how that dollar has changed over the course of the years. And so in 85-86, on a statewide basis, we were spending 76 cents out of that dollar on salary. And today, that's 65 cents out of that dollar. Again, the two factors, the qualified economic offer and its requirement to maintain existing fringe benefits and the effect that's had on bargaining, and then secondarily, the escalation in health insurance costs. Your data has been relatively similar. You see that same trend line. You were 80 cents out of that dollar in 85-86, and now you're 66 cents out of that dollar in 2006-2007. Well, what does all that mean? It means if you spent the same percentage on benefits that you did in 85-86, the average Madison teacher salary would be $59,949. That's an increase of over $8,000 more than the present salary levels. What comes with that increased salary is also increased Wisconsin retirement system payments and Social Security payments. Now, obviously, this is an example because benefits have changed, utilization has changed, demographics have changed, et cetera. What if the percentage had stayed the same as 93-94? And the reason we picked that was the year that the state came in with the revenue limits, two-thirds funding, and the qualified economic offer. So it's tied to the QEO for the selection of that year. The average salary would be $56,786, so roughly almost $5,000 more on salary than present levels, and again, increased Wisconsin retirement system pension and Social Security payments. One of the things that in the early 90s we had gone through and created some charts as to where was the family premium going to go as it was increasing compared to the average salary, and at that point we also did it with the BA base, the starting salary. And we found this intersection with the BA base and the family premium somewhere around 2013-2014 and the average salary in 2020-2021. And what I mean by that is the simple math of compounding, if we continued to increase these at historical levels, where would we end up where they would intersect? The statewide projections are family premiums have averaged roughly about a 10.8% increase per year, where our wages statewide have been about 3.5. So just simple math would tell you if you're increasing one by 10.5 and another by 3.5, eventually they're going to line up. Well, that's projected to occur in 2020-2021, which is still a few years off, but a little bit closer than I think we would like it to be. The next slide shows where you are at on the same projection with the WPS family plan. If we do this same projection with GHC, you're much further out because the GHC is a lesser expensive plan. But you can see that same intersection occurs with your historical averages of roughly 11% on the health insurance and 3% on the wages. So again, your situation is not much different than other school districts in the state. Some of these districts are getting much closer to this, particularly in the southeastern corridor in Waukesha County or Washington County, et cetera, where the premiums tend to be $4,000 or $5,000 more on the health insurance. We've noticed this as well for how your premiums have changed over the years. Madison was one of the first districts back in 1978 to offer a dual-choice health insurance. And so you have, and we'll get to a slide later that lists all the things, or not all, but the major items that the district has done to address health insurance costs over the years. So back in 1985, you offered both a WPS plan and a GHC plan. And as time has gone on, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, you'll see the gap between those respective premiums increasing. One is a feature of plan design, that being that the WPS plan has greater freedom of choice. So when there's more providers to choose from, generally it's harder for the insurance carrier to negotiate discounts with any particular provider. And then the second has been adverse selection. As employees come into the district, and Bob can speak to you on it, giving you some general percentages, but more and more people have been selecting GHC over WPS because of the premium contribution factor that comes into play. I don't know if, Bob, if you want to elaborate on that.
Well, just to look at the teacher unit, I would say about when the QEO first came in, so 93, 95, somewhere in there, we were at consistently about 75% of our teachers in WPS and 25 in GHC. Our last totals this year would be GHC at 51% and WPS at 49%.
Could you back up one slide? I just want to be sure I understood. What you're saying in that slide is that the projection is by 2018-19, the cost of insurance is half of... No.
No. In 2018-2019, the cost of your WPS
insurance
family plan would be equal to your average teacher salary.
Right, would
so
be equal to.
It will have surpassed your starting wage five
so
or six
the
years earlier.
So wages are going up.
Right.
Given the revenue caps and a variety of other things, if you hold everything constant by that time, we'd be paying people only in health insurance.
Some point, yeah.
Something like
right.
That.
Which, you know, your auditor or actuary will tell you is impossible.
Not going to happen. But
the economy could, health insurance can only increase so fast for so long before it becomes the economy.
Yeah.
By percentages. So
okay.
At some point, something's going to happen here. The thing that's disconcerting from a school board association standpoint is when we were running these projections in the early 90s, we were coming out to just about the same time frame. And we were hoping that the rate of premium would slowly go down. And in fact, probably when you had your post-employment benefit actuarial assessment, the actuary, he or she, put in a chart that showed estimates going from 12 to 11 to 10 to 9 to 8, 7, 6%, so that over time health insurance would start growing at a slower rate because you're off at such a bigger base. But what happens is even if it slows down, you're off at such a big dollar amount that for districts, let's say, in Milwaukee County that have a $25,000 health insurance plan, they get a 10% increase. They go, well, we only got 10%. Well, it's $2,500 that's going for every employee to that plan. You with GHC, 10% off of a 12,000 plan is $1,200. So you can just see that gap from district to district is how the percentages impact on them.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no problem.
Ms. Carstensen?
Yes. Sorry. Going back to the next slide, in the comparison between WPS and group health, your figures were that now 51% of MTI...
51% of the teachers, it's higher because both the EA and C unit are higher than 51%.
Okay. So it's 51% of the teachers currently take group health.
That's correct.
And 49% take WPS.
Correct.
So from a purely budgetary standpoint, that would mean that our increase in health insurance costs has got to have moderated some over what it would have been if we'd retained the historic proportions. Is that correct?
Correct. And if you recall earlier on, the percentage you spent on benefits was just slightly below the state average. The state average was 26.1 and you were at 25.9. So dollar amounts, since your budget is so large, are still large amounts of money being spent, but your costs are slightly lower. Now, how they would play if everyone was on GHC, everyone was on a different carrier, you know, WPS would tell you if they were the sole provider that their rate would be lower because they wouldn't be suffering from adverse selection. And GHC would say our rate might go up slightly because some of the people on GHC might have higher claims. And Bob can probably elaborate on that more from the insurance committee.
Right. I definitely think that WPS is certainly getting the bulk of the claims at this point, and therefore... their experience is much higher than what GHC is. And our employees are certainly notice that and are opting for a lower cost option over time.
Do we have enough data to see whether there's any trend that at some point teachers who came into our system with group health transfer to WPS at some experience range or anything like that? Can we track any of that?
We have, as you know, we have annual choice every year that takes effect on January 1st. Mm-hmm. Consistently over the last, at least 7 or 8 years, the trend has been from WPS to GHC rather than the other way. And another interesting trend is that a few years ago, GHC participants, when they retired because of the restrictions of an HMO, were opting in some cases to go to a WPS plan so that they would have more access if they were traveling out of the area. Today, that's just reversed. We're getting WPS participants opting for GHC at retirement.
Thank you.
One of the things that Bob and I discussed in preparing for this was going through and documenting the major modifications that the school district has done locally to address health insurance costs. And giving the statewide perspective on this, I would state unequivocally that you've been much more proactive on this issue than the majority of school districts in the state. And as we talked about in the beginning, in 1978, you introduced the dual health insurance plan with MTI's consent. And so at that point in time, you introduced the 100% GHC and then the 90% of the WPS. And then delineated throughout this slide are the various changes that have occurred both for administrators and for the MTI bargaining unit, and with many of the similar changes also going into place with your AFSCME bargaining units as well. You see there are some major changes here as introduction of a $300, $600 upfront deductible, the drug card co-payment in 2002, the movement to a WPS PPO plan for MTI, so you no longer have a fee-for-service indemnity plan. So if you remember that chart earlier on that had the benefit plan design, you used to be in that far left column with your WPS plan, and then you moved over to the PPO for more managed care. And then also in the last round, increased co-payments for out-of-network services and out-of-network drug card increases, all with the goal of steering people toward lower-cost providers. That's the goal before those. So the million-dollar question or more, what can the school district do to slow down the growth in health insurance costs? Well, the first thing, as with any issue, is it starts with education. My experience has been that health insurance is a very emotional topic, that people have their own personal experiences with accessing health care, whether they be good, positive, or indifferent. And the main element is educating people on their role in containing health insurance costs and also with other factors outside of the school system that affect the costs. An insurance task force. Districts that have been successful in reaching consensus on modifying health insurance have often implemented an insurance task force to review the issue, and we'll go in through some detail on how that process could operate. Plan design changes, that's one function of it. If your plan is not getting the most, your dollar's not working as hard for you as it could, there may be plan design changes that could make your plan more efficient. Provider changes. You have the benefit of being in an area where you have multiple providers who would solicit your business, which separates you from a large number of school districts who only have one or two providers to select from. And wellness programs. A recent development, perhaps, been around the private sector for a while, but we're seeing more school districts implement some form of a wellness program or other sort of proactive preventive care mechanism. So the first element of staff education. The first thing is to relay to employees the cost of health insurance. And one of the following slides I'm going to show you has something on a sample employee compensation form so that they can see that delineated throughout. Some discussion on the impact of operations. So as Ms. Robarts pointed out, the dollar amounts that are spent on health insurance, if you're spending $36 million on health insurance, within underneath your revenue limit, where else in the budget are you making sacrifices to cover those costs? Participation in a joint insurance task force so that employees have a say in how this process works. Obviously, in the collective bargaining arena, if there are going to be changes that are going to be made, they're going to come through an agreement with the union. A quality of care counts pamphlet. You're one of the few districts I'm aware of that has this, and Bob was kind enough to give me one of these. And this I felt to be very helpful in probably instructing employees on the benefit of this, because oftentimes the least cost provider is not necessarily the best provider in the long run because of complications, et cetera.
Could you say a little bit more about what that publication was? Are you Mr. Nadler?
This was a some research that was done by the Alliance, and basically it looked at hospitals specifically and about the quality of care that is given at specific hospitals in Wisconsin. We sent this out to all employees just as an information piece so that they would be able to look at this and try to make some good choices as to the quality of care that they'll get at any individual hospital in the area. We don't steer people to hospitals. Obviously GHC would because of their provider network, but we don't steer people towards hospitals. So we felt that this publication that the Alliance put out was a good piece of education for our employees so that they can make a good choice on where they might want to get their care.
Thank you.
Next, you'll see consumption behaviors that impact costs. So this could be as simple as saying to people or notifying them of where urgent care providers are located versus the emergency room due to the drastic differences in cost between those. And that could also get to provider costs, which I'll talk to at the end. Lifestyle decisions that impact costs, whether there's modifications someone can make in their diet, their insulin, whatever it happens to be in order to reduce costs, and then provider costs at the very end, which is sometimes forgotten. Your administration did meet with myself and the executive director of the School Board Association to talk about this issue in particular because it often gets forgotten about. We focus in on the employee aspect of it while providers are out engaging in activities that also escalate our costs considerably, whether it be building new facilities or duplication of facilities, et cetera. The sample compensation form that I alluded to. In the early 90s, I was negotiating a school district and had a school board president who was president of a county business council and tipped me off to this idea that he had been using in their employment situation for years. And basically what it is a document that demonstrates to an employee individually what their cost is. Now, this is a hypothetical employee in the school system. This is the average teacher salary for both years. So the salary, the Social Security, Wisconsin Retirement System would be the same for anyone with that salary. Underneath this sample compensation form, the employee has selected WPS Family Plan, and then this has the cost for that health insurance, their dental insurance, life insurance, et cetera. And so what's telling about this is that the employee's increase in health insurance costs were greater than their salary cost from 05-06 to 06-07, and that's because the health insurance increased at 12% and their salary only went up 3%. So the employee's take-home compensation that they saw directly tied to their salary, you can see that amount, and then their benefit costs were actually greater than the salary costs for a total compensation increase of 4.89. Now, the same average teacher who has selected GHC has a different breakout, and this is just, again, due to the fact that the GHC premium is substantially less in cost than the WPS. And here the employee's wages are increasing at a greater amount than their benefits. Now, with these slides, I'm not trying to draw comparisons between the quality of the plans or the plan design or the freedom of choice. Those are obviously things that the employees have to take into account in making their decision. But this is something for someone to look at. And so if they look at what their salary increase is, they also know the other factors that are coming into play that impact on our budget, obviously.
Ms. Kubza?
If you look at the two charts, the one before and then this one, and you're talking about employees with the same salary, and then you're looking at the total compensation package, the employee with the WPS has a significantly higher total compensation package and has a higher percent increase than the one with the group health I mean, from an employee's perspective, why wouldn't they think that's a good thing?
Well, it depends on which employee you are. I mean, the present program, as Bob said, allows for migration between the plans. So even if I was making less money in total compensation under GHC, I still have the ability, if I so chose in the future, to opt into WPS. So the WPS costs are going to be higher because of freedom of choice of providers and plan design versus the GHC. And so when we balance these out, where we're roughly at 50-50 in the bargaining unit, that's where we end up with a total package cost of where you settled the last time. So there's one getting more this round and the other getting less, but that could change, although historically the trend has been that the GHC has been less over the last several years.
I guess so. My point is the district is spending considerably more on this one employee than they are on the other employee. That's accurate?
Correct. And the employee, however, is paying 10% of that health insurance cost. So when it goes up, that's already carved out of that.
So the health under there is 90%?
Correct. Right. That's 90% of what the employer pays. So the employee also is sensitive to the premium increase because he or she is absorbing a 12% increase in their out-of-pocket. Mm-hmm. Where underneath the GHC, they're not directly having an out-of-pocket increase.
So to look at what their out-of-pocket would be, you'd have to subtract the $1,800 from...
Right, because the $1,800 is just 90% of the premium.
And I think along with this, you would want to do a net compensation form as well, because the costs that are associated with WPS, Bob mentioned the premium cost, but in addition to that, there are deductible costs and... the way we've got the plan structured, there may be some other costs, some higher costs with the drug copays and so forth, that would affect the employee's net pay, even though gross pay would look better, net pay would look less.
Ms. Carstensen?
So I think one of Lori's points is that the cost to the district, the comparative cost, is that this cost is much more. But taking into account what you're saying, the individual is coming out behind in terms of their net income because they're paying approximately $1,800 a year in premium, plus about $600. This is a family, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Plus, so it's somewhere in the $2,400 range of out-of-pocket
right.
from their salary.
So if you look at net pay,
right.
what they get to take home, it's $2,400 less than the person who has WPS.
Okay. GHC.
Yeah, than the person who has WPS. The person who has GHC.
Right. But I'm just saying that there are two kinds of ways of looking at this impact. One is it's more expensive for the district, and the other is it provides less net salary to the individual.
Correct.
Ms. Kupsa?
Isn't there also a third way to look at it as far as when you look at the percentage? Because the percentage here for the WPS and total compensation increase is higher than under the group health, so does this percentage then decrease the amount that's available for everyone?
That is correct, yeah.
So that's just the third way to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, the element with all of this is, as I mentioned previously, there are pros and cons in your health insurance selection. So the person who selects WPS, that provider may not be available underneath GHC. It gives freedom of choice of providers so they can see a broader network of individuals. But with that freedom of choice comes a price.
Thank you.
So the staff education, when we talk about impact on operations, these are similar to what we discussed earlier when we were talking on a more global scene for what they do. So I won't recount all these again. But that same information going out to staff, I have found that to be very helpful in school districts where that information is shared, particularly with those who have declining enrollment or real revenue limit pinches, when employees can see, that's what happened to that position. I wondered what happened to that position. Well, it was attritioned out because of our benefit costs. So some districts have implemented an insurance task force process, and I'm going to give you an example of one that happened in a local Dane County school in Sun Prairie. What they did was they formulated the task force, and they established the role of the task force. It was a committee created out of collective bargaining, but it was not a bargaining committee. So the committee did not have the ability to reach a deal on something which would automatically go into effect and be implemented. They set up a meeting schedule. They were covered by the open meetings law, so the meetings took place in public session. They hired and selected an insurance consultant jointly. So they did use an insurance consultant, and the rationale behind using an insurance consultant was to bring a neutral into the process. And then after they were through with the process, the information then got brought back to the board and to the bargaining teams, both their AFSCME local and the teachers union, for deliberation. Now, the consultant role, and these vary by consultant, but these are generally what they will look at, is first they will discuss with the staff the reasons for the health care cost increases. The demographics may be an internal demographic as far as the makeup of the group, as far as its age breakout, or it could be a more general one in total. A compelling story that I heard recently from an insurance consultant was that he said the way that our projections are going out on this is that by 2030, the nation as a whole will have the demographics of Florida. And it's just basically the aging of our society and the impact that it has on utilization rates and health insurance costs. Prescription drugs. The Kaiser Family Foundation found that prescription drugs utilization is up 70% in the last 13 years. And there's a lot of factors that could come into play with that. New drugs coming online, direct advertising, et cetera. Utilization, both on prescription drugs and on services. In 1990, there was one MRI operator in Waukesha County. Now there are over 20. So as these new services mushroom, we see higher and higher utilization as those things come in. A plan design, those who have what they now call vertically integrated health insurance, another word for HMO, tend to have lower cost increases because they're able to get greater discounts with the doctors than those who have broader plan freedom. Deregulation. When I gave you that chart earlier on that showed the increase in costs, there's this strange connection between when deregulation happened and the premium increases started going up, when there used to be much more regulation over where providers were located and what kind of services would be provided. A major element is cost shifting. As the number of uninsured grow, those who are insured often foot the bill for some of that. And then Medicare reimbursement. We, as a state, end up being on one of the lowest tiers for reimbursing of Medicare costs. So the insurance consultant will go through those global factors and then also talk about those that are local. One of the key elements within this that was done in Sun Prairie was a survey of the membership. The survey was done jointly, so both parties crafted the questions. The individual responses were deemed to be confidential. The employee logged in with a non-employee identified code, so it didn't have my name associated with it, and I went to a separate website, filled out the survey, and then the survey results were then shared with everyone, but no one could ever deem how Bob Butler voted or Bob Nadler, et cetera, et cetera. The survey results were then brought back to the team, and the discussion took place then as to, all right, 80% of our employees are going to this provider. Should we negotiate directly with this provider? In that case, it was Dean Care. So the insurance consultant then negotiated with Dean Care to get modifications in their plan to cover retirees, to change the out-of-state coverages, et cetera, to try to get a more palatable plan that lined up more closely with their existing coverage. So what can what districts are doing to address health insurance costs, the plan design changes, provider changes, wellness programs, legislative initiatives. On the plan design changes, employee contributions, deductibles, and in this fashion, you'll often get an insurance consultant or even a health provider who tell you that if you go to a straight upfront deductible plan that's significant, if you don't have some form of exemptions for preventive care, whether it be prenatal, annual physicals, or well baby care, et cetera, you may actually be driving up your costs in the long run because people aren't going to do those items if it has an out-of-pocket expense. A three-tiered drug card. particularly in the private sector, we're seeing more percentage-driven drug cards, and the last tier is a copayment. So if the prescription drug goes from $80 to $90 in that third tier, right now my copayment might be $30. I don't really ever feel directly the increase of that drug to then go and ask my doctor or pharmacist if there's a generic alternative. With a copayment that's percentage-based, as my fees for those rise, I might say, is there a generic equivalent or a second-tier prescription drug that would be less expensive? Copayments, whether it be emergency room visit copayments, office visit, mental health, AODA, all of those so employees have some interplay into the consumption of the benefit. What's been introduced in a couple of school districts in the state, not too many, in the Anago and River Falls School District, is our health reimbursement accounts and health savings accounts. These generally go into play with a high upfront deductible plan, although for the HRA, they're not required. They also can serve as a vehicle for employees for post-employment health insurance coverage. So in your case, it could be something that could supplement your retirement insurance account that you have. Alternative benefit plans, these are plan designs where employees receive cash in lieu of the insurance so that those who have coverage from their spouse or from another source could opt off of the district's plan and go to that element. And Medicare carve-out plans for retirees, so that for those who are still grouped in with your plan, there may be a way to modify the plan so that the majority of those would be better off coupling a Medicare supplement and Medicare Part D as opposed to just going with a straight Medicare carve-out plan. So those are some of the changes we've seen. On provider modifications, I mentioned to you the Sun Prairie School District, they modified their plan from the WH Trust. Yeah, I'm sorry, Ruth.
I just wondered, since you're on Sun Prairie again, if you could say a little bit more about what kinds of savings were generated or what happened in Sun Prairie,
how did
savings go to employees, how did they go to the district, what kinds of savings, just whatever.
They had settled their contract, and then after the contract was settled, they then initiated the insurance task force, which had been agreed upon as a memorandum of understanding in the contract. They engaged the insurance consultant, and at that point, once the survey results came back, the insurance consultant negotiated with the various carriers, primarily Physicians Plus, Unity, and Dean, to see what kind of rate and plan design changes they could get. In their circumstance, roughly 80% of the employees were going to Dean Care. They found that out through the survey. They then negotiated with Dean Care and were able to reduce their health insurance costs by about $3,600 to $4,000. I don't remember the exact cost per year on a family plan. The savings from that and the teacher group went back onto the salary schedule. So the teachers went from a spot where they would have had their pay frozen other than for step movement through the schedule to getting a pay increase. And they were able to negotiate with Dean to get the provider network to a point where they were able to cover retirees out of state through their point of service network. Verona School.
Ms. Garsonson?
Yes. Okay. So the savings they realized on the health insurance went into the salaries. So from the perspective of the total budget or the taxpayer, there weren't any savings there. Is that correct?
Well, they did make savings in their post-employment benefits because those are outside of the costing calculation, and they were also in negotiations with their support staff group, which has not been finalized, and with their administrative team. So there was a savings back to the district in the process. But if you recall that very first or second slide we had where we talked about how our salaries compared to other states, they helped to switch the situation because they are very concerned about their starting pay rates. Due to their health insurance costs, their starting pay rates have somewhat lagged, but they do have flexibility on the salary schedule, but this will help them in that regard.
Okay. No, well, yeah, and I think that, but I think it's important for us to kind of look at that because it does look to me like if we agree to a change, then the question is how the savings that are generated are then used. And much of the discussion that I think that what has happened in terms of negotiation has been one thing, and what some people in the public expect is very different. That I think that, that the board has looked at it in terms of if we save here, we will be able to do exactly what Sun Prairie did, which is to be more competitive in our entry-level salaries, et cetera.
Yeah, and that's a negotiations topic as to how the quote-unquote savings from the health insurance are then redistributed based upon your bargain that you're in, whether you're settled, how you settled. And from my perspective, we know we have some substantial wage pressures because our wages have not increased to the point that we would like. And if we can shift those dollar expenditures and use them more wisely, then it's a sound public policy. But I hear what you're saying from board members all the time of why do we make this change if we're going to give all the savings back to them? We often see that in the OPEB liability. Now, yours is a little different because you have a fixed amount there based on that retirement insurance account. But it does ease the wage pressure arguments down the road. Another thing, yes?
On Sun Prairie, did they then only have Dean Care? Did they negotiate?
Correct. They only have Dean Care, but it's a point-of-service product. So if you're in South Central Wisconsin, you only go to Dean providers. If you happen to live in Waukesha, you're basically deemed to be out of network, and you can go to a wider array of providers out there. But the rationale behind it is Dean wants you to go, and this would be the same for GHC or Physicians Plus, who have all offered you point-of-service products. They want you to use their providers because that's where they can get the greatest discounts. They can then work on those doctors to reduce costs, to do things with the way prescription drugs are filled, to do more preventive care than if I could go to any provider I wanted.
One other question. The starting salaries in Sun Prairie, did they go up by a percentage? How were they impacted?
The starting salaries went up by a percentage. I could get to you the exact dollar amounts, but I believe they're around a 3-plus percent. If they hadn't made the change, there was going to be no increase on the salary schedule. So and the salary and the base was actually, if I recall properly, the base was actually going to go backwards.
So everybody's salary went up 3% or whatever the number was?
Correct. Verona School District recently made a modification in their health insurance plan as well to a preferred provider network that's similar to your WPS plan. Health maintenance organizations are also into play. That's what you see in your GHC plan. You'll see that in the state plan for multiple ones. Middleton School District and just more recently the Oregon School District with their support staff went into a multiple choice health insurance providers where you can select between Middleton, Unity, or Dean in a point-of-service product. And by having the two offering similar products, the goal has been that they compete with each other and keep costs down. And it has been effective in Middleton. The Middleton rates for the actual cost of the district have been roughly $350 on the single and $950 on the family plan. So it has created some internal competition, but the two plans are very similar in their costs that they charge. So employees more or less are making provider selection choices versus insurance companies.
I have a question. If there's competition between there, does that mean the employees are making some payment to?
In Middleton, they are, let me look here quick. They are not making a contribution off of the lower cost plan. What happens is it creates competition amongst the providers because neither one of them wants to lose subscribers.
But why would the subscribers care if they're not paying for either one?
Because they pay off the lower cost plan. So it's just like your GHC, not quite to your GHC WPS extreme, but there's still an out-of-pocket expense. So there's an incentive for me as the employee, if I don't have great allegiance to a particular provider, to move over to a less costly provider. Plus, neither one of them wants to get too far out of line with the other because then they'll think, well, our percentage of the market will shrink, and eventually I'll get cut out of the equation and some other provider will come in.
So is the district paying the lowest provider's coverage? Is that, and then you have to pay extra if you want the higher?
Correct.
Okay.
And that change just went into place in the Oregon school system as well with their AFSCME bargaining units. They pay 90% of the lowest cost HMO, and they have Unity and Dean, and they also offer a Unity and Dean point-of-service plan. And so if you wanted more freedom of choice, you can have it, but you're going to pay more out of pocket. And by paying off of the lowest cost plan, their goal is to keep those two plans competing with each other to have baseline costs. The state health insurance plan, Ms. Carstensen asked earlier about that. The Monona Grove School District has it. And presently, just to give you what those premiums were, it was $961 on a family plan for their Physicians Plus, which is what they're basing that off of. And then, yes.
Question about that. Having voted for domestic partner insurance coverage myself years ago, I remember the legislative, unsuccessful legislative effort to cut aid by the amount of money that the district spent on domestic partner insurance. It's my understanding that the state health insurance plan still excludes any domestic partnership arrangements.
That correct? Is correct.
So Monona doesn't provide the kind of coverage that we provide
correct.
For same-sex and opposite-sex couples who meet the domestic partner criteria.
Correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the city of Madison either was in or considered getting into the state health plan and is also a provider of domestic partner insurance to its employees.
Yeah, I can't recall if they're with Dean or with Unity. They're not in the state health plan.
But they're not in the state health plan.
No, and on that list, Sun Prairie offers domestic partner benefits through Dean Care, and Bob may want to talk about when the district's contacted carriers about how the bid is aligned for that, because you could have choice that would mirror the state plan but not be in the state plan in order to retain that benefit
to retain
for your
that
employees.
Benefit. Okay, thank you.
Well,
other questions?
And I was just going to add that when we went out for bids and to look at what kind of benefits we wanted to provide, we definitely included domestic partner because it is contractual for us at this point, so we had to include that. Mm-hmm. We included some other things that are contractual and maybe historical for us that maybe wouldn't be commonplace for some of the other school districts, but for us they're at least in our culture. So we tried to include those all into our bid process.
And then the last item I have listed there is a relatively new initiative. It's not a self-funding arrangement. It's where school districts cooperatively attempt to purchase health insurance. So just like you may get several districts that cooperatively get together to purchase supplies, in this case they're attempting to purchase health insurance. And their goal behind that is to get greater leverage with the insurance carriers and or health providers on plan design. So to address an issue like you had, Ruth, where a carrier might say, no, I'm not going to cover that. Well, if you get to a certain quantifiable mass of 500 or 1,000 employees, they may be more apt to say, yes, we'll cover retirees beyond COBRA, we'll cover domestic partners, et cetera. So we'll see how that's playing out. That's just starting.
Did the Sun Prairie Joint Task Force also explore the cooperative health insurance purchasing agreements, or is that subsequent?
That's subsequent to Sun Prairie made the modification in May of this year, and this cooperative health insurance purchasing arrangement has just started in August, and they have the cooperation of their AFSCME units and all the non-represented employees in trying to solicit a bid from the various providers in the area. And so basically by creating this coalition, they're hopeful that they can get plan design changes and a cheaper rate that none of them could access individually. Now, in your sense, you're in a much stronger spot because of your size and the number of employees you have that you're able to lever changes from any provider that most districts aren't going to have those opportunities. Wellness programs. This is something that we've been publicizing and trying to get more involvement on. The school districts have all sorts of information, staff, and facilities to help encourage this. And I know Ms. Robarts has read this article because this was one of the things that spurred her asking me to come here. But we put out a publication just addressing health insurance costs and looking at health care for our members. And there was some discussion on the Healthy Lifestyles program. And I would encourage you to contact the Greendale School District. They've put in a fair amount of programs on this to try to be proactive on addressing items before they get to be a health insurance cost, and integrating things with their community recreation programs for employees.
Could you say a little bit more about how that works or what they're doing?
Well, it really started as just a grassroots idea from their business manager, and it just kind of grew from that to bring consultants in to talk to employees about diet, to talk to them about smoking cessation programs, to talk to them about physically fit efforts. And they've just incorporated it as an everyday aspect of the school system. They modeled it off of a program that was in effect in Utah, in a school district out there that had done it, who quite honestly hadn't seen a big reduction in their health insurance costs from implementing this, but had had a substantial reduction in their leave. So if they weren't spending the money on substitutes and they had the regular teacher in the classroom, they did have a reciprocal benefit in that arena.
Thank you.
Heart risk assessment. This was an idea that came out of bargaining at the Arrowhead Union High School, where the district board had wanted an employee contribution to health insurance, and the employees were reluctant to go that route. And the solution to it was that we decided there would be some minimal health insurance contribution. If you took a heart risk assessment, if you did not take it, you would contribute more to the health insurance plan. Now, the heart risk assessment, again, was a proactive approach where the district employs a nurse. The nurse comes in. It's not a district nurse, I should clarify that. We contract out with a nurse who comes in, administers a blood test, a body mass index, blood pressure, stress test, et cetera. And the information from that, the district never sees. All they ever know is Bob Nodler took the test. No data goes to the district. Bob Nodler takes the test. He pays less to the health insurance than if Bob Butler doesn't take the test. And then from that information, a personal profile comes out, gets sent to Bob. He looks at it and says, I had no idea my cholesterol was at this level. And then I take that step from there to try to address it. So it was, again, attempting to address the person who would never go for a physical. That was the goal, to get that individual who would never walk into a doctor's office. Yes.
What is the difference between the contributions and the amount that they didn't have to pay if they took the assessment?
The contribution difference is actually quite minor. It's only $25 a month. And what was surprising, Arrowhead High School has about 150 teaching staff. And when this was first put into effect in 2003, we were thinking, well, if we get two-thirds of the people to participate, we'll be pleased. Everyone participated, including retirees. We had people come back just to make that difference in the contribution aspect of it. And after that went into effect at the high school, then all the other school districts in Waukesha County, with the exception of Kettle Moraine and Waukesha, so you have Pewaukee and all the Arrowhead System schools, implemented the same process. So the union has been totally on board with promoting this as well as a form of preventive care. The concerns that were initially raised were confidentiality. That was the primary one of, well, how do I know this medical information won't be shared with the school district? Well, the information went to the provider, went to the employee. District never saw anything. Then the other aspect of it was, you know, some criticism about, is this big brother that you're telling me I have to take this assessment? And so, no, you don't have to take it. It's just we're trying to nip the cost in the bud, and it's much cheaper if you have high cholesterol to address it now with some prescriptions or change your diet than to have a heart bypass surgery. So that was the goal behind it. And so we've had a very cooperative relationship with the union out there and trying to promote that. Providing quality data to employees. You're one of the few districts I'm aware of that does that, and Mr. Nodler spoke about that briefly before. So what are the incentives for change? This all sounds great, and it sounds like it's a simple way to address some very complex issues, but Ms. Carstensen asked the question about, well, how do you do this? Obviously, there has to be some exchange, some consideration for this. The most common is a salary schedule increase. There's also increased Wisconsin Retirement System pension and Social Security payments that come from these changes. Staffing levels, people don't, I think about this, but if you can reduce your overall costs and compensation by making your health insurance dollars work better for you, it can affect staffing levels as far as class sizes, overloads. There are a number of districts that hire staff and then add on additional classes versus hiring another staff. Just like in the private sector, people did overtime versus hiring another person because the benefit costs got so high, it made more sense to just stack the workload on an existing individual versus hiring a new employee. And obviously that creates issues about productivity and effectiveness, et cetera. but that's an area that is also impacted by it. One of the things that we have found helpful in districts that have been looking to make this modification is you put the employee's gross salary down if no change happened underneath the status quo or if a health insurance change happened, and the reciprocal reduction in their health insurance contribution, and so then the net salary gain if a change happened. Then that net salary gain is also viewed. That's what they're going to get per year while they're actively working. And then the bottom half of the chart shows what happens on those salaries using a hypothetical employee and taking their three highest average year's earnings and what that does to their estimated monthly benefit on the Wisconsin retirement system. The WRS is a benefit-driven formula that takes your highest 3 years' earnings, average them, multiplies by your years of service, and then depending upon how many years you have before 2000 and how many years you have after, it uses a different multiplier to generate your monthly benefit. So underneath this example, we took your typical retiree, retires at 57, has these salaries, lives to 80, which the U.S. Census Bureau will say the average person retiring at 57 will live to, the benefit addition that would have for that person. So not only do they get the present dollar salary gain, but they're also going to have that net pension gain of over $26,000 per year. Now, in doing the justification or the discussion of this, obviously they'll look at the health insurance change and say, is it worth $2,400 a year in salary plus $26,000 in pension gain, or would I rather have the benefits as is? And that's where you get into the bargaining aspect as to the pros and cons of it.
Ms. Carstensen.
This doesn't look at the impact on income tax, does it?
No. I mean,
okay. So, because the health insurance costs are not taxed, but the salary would be. So
correct.
It'd be a little bit change there.
Right. This would be, and obviously that comes into the discussion, and you have a flexible spending account, so if there are out-of-pocket expenses, they could run through that. But you're correct. The benefits are a non-taxed item, and the salary is a taxed item. So that would be reduced by whatever post-employment taxes you were paying. Provider costs. I mentioned this briefly earlier, that we had had some preliminary discussion on this and becoming or making employees aware of what provider cost differences are. And you are a step ahead of most districts with this because this has, in fact, you're the only district I know of that does this, that has information on costs and provider quality, which is a good place to start. There's also information online that's available. I'll be honest with you, the websites are somewhat cumbersome to work and navigate through to get the costs. They're not as specific as you would like on the first two. The last one is one that's a fee-based program that you have to pay for to enter into. But again, it's trying to get more transparency in provider costs. And just to beg the question as to, you know, why does provider A cost more than provider B for the same service? And your quality document gets set to a point. If the quality is better and there's less complications, that explains it. If the quality is worse, why are they costing more? Is it the level of Medicare reimbursements, et cetera? And then at the end, I just have questions on anything.
Well, we've had quite a few questions already and certainly appreciate the information from both of you. Are there more questions from the board or the committee at this point, Ms. Kubza?
I have a question. I don't know who this is for, but you talked about the task force, and I know we had an insurance task force with MTI as part of the last collective bargaining agreement. Can you tell me how that compared to the types of task force and the items that Bob was talking about?
In my view, and Bob was involved with this too, both Bobs, one of the major differences that made the Sun Prairie one work, I think, was the outside consultant, which is a neutral who is there gathering this information and kind of facilitating that. The task force that we had presented the information, basically the information was presented, and then there was no interest at that point on the part of the union to go any further. But in my mind, and Bob can jump in, the outside third-party consultant who was putting all the information together and kind of leading the discussion, I think, was a major difference.
Yeah, I would second that. And I think the aspect of what the consultant brought was not only the neutrality, but then the survey crafting of getting that survey information back. while guaranteeing confidentiality to really assess where employees were on particular topics, was beneficial. And then, obviously, they did not have a pay increase, even though their total package cost was substantial at Sun Prairie. So they had a lot of things that lined up. One of the things that you have a similarity on is you both have a similar post-employment structure. So what was interesting at Sun Prairie was we had employees who viewed making a change in health insurance as a positive because then they were going to be able to stay on the plan longer when they retired because they also get a fixed amount of money in a retirement insurance account similar to yours. And so as the premium went up 20% for them with the WA Trust, they suddenly looked and said, well, the term I'm going to have on this plan is going to be much shorter than if I make the move to Dean Care. But the consultant did a very good job there.
So how was the consultant selected and how much did it cost?
The consultant was discussed with both the union and the board up front. They had individuals. They interviewed them. The district paid for the consultant. And he gave an estimate of $10,000. I don't think he charged a full amount, but I could find that out for you because I think it was on a monthly basis. He was not a broker. So he was a pure consultant, so he didn't have a particular relationship with a carrier or any percentage of the premium. Bob, you might be able to comment on what the consultants charge, if you know.
I'm not sure what the consultants charge, but there are a couple of consultants in the area who have a reputation of being very neutral and not a broker, obviously, so that they don't have a vested interest in what company or plan is selected. So, I mean, I don't think it would be that difficult to find one, but it has to be someone that both the unions and the administration, the board, trusts so that, you know, we can be candid and we can come up with a good plan.
I think one other thing that separated you from Sun Prairie was that your teachers' union did make changes during the bargain to the health plan. Sun Prairie had not. So in respect for the union, they probably viewed it, we have addressed this topic through the settlement and did make some modifications in the plan, and here it is coming again before us. So this is, I view this as a constant topic that as long as the premiums are going up at this rate and having this impact on your budget, you're going to almost always be talking about health insurance until there's a solution to it.
Ms. Carstensen?
I had a question about the wellness programs. At least, was it Greendale that you said had a particularly good model? Do you know whether that was developed with kind of staff involvement or something that the administration provided? Or
I don't off the top of my head. There is an article in the school news publication on that, and so I could reference that to you if you'd like it to get some more details or contact the business manager directly. But she has done many presentations on this. She was a former teacher who initiated the process, and so I don't know what kind of interplay she had with the staff in initiating it, but I think that would probably be a positive idea to garner suggestions, particularly with such a diverse workforce that you have with so many experts on these kind of topics. Maybe you're in a position where many districts don't have these kind of resources of people to tap into their knowledge base on.
I'd like to say that one of the things that was very interesting to me about your article and also your presentation is that it allows us as a board, you know, your emphasis on staff education, particularly differences in, you know, plan choices in terms of one's take-home pay, the percentage of one's salary that goes to benefits. And I think what I've heard anyway is a very important question to a lot of our staff, which is, you know, what difference does insurance coverage right now or the plan mean to them post-retirement? I mean, we've talked for years as a board internally about our retirees going from, in the teachers unit, going from WPS to group health in order to protect their post-retirement coverage. Your article is really the first time that I realized it would be possible to have to make some of this information available to our employees in a way that would, you know, educate them on their own choices and their own consequences. And I I found that very, very helpful. I want to thank you and the School Board Association for this whole issue, which is, I don't think, available online.
No, it's not, but if you'd like extra copies, we'd be more than
happy to. We've provided them to you know, the board and to the public through these things. So, you know, anybody who hasn't had a chance to read the July 2006 issue of School News, we could help with that. Ms. Cubs, did you have a question or comment?
I did, and it's the follow-up on the issue of staff education. Do you have any recommendations, or can you tell us how other school districts handled the issue of staff education without somehow violating collective bargaining?
Well, the main element to start with is a dialogue with the union on the topic. So the districts that have been most effective with this have done this underneath the umbrella of the Joint Insurance Task Force and gone through that approach. There are certain elements on there, like the compensation form is something that you're not required to negotiate over. This is a factual document saying this is your pay and benefits. But as far as budgetary impact, providing information that Mr. Price put and Mr. Rainwater probably put together for you at your budget. I'm sure you probably even share that with a lot of them already. I know it's online, but it's just trying to see that interplay. I found it helpful when employees saw they knew that the workload on them had increased, or they had that perception, but they didn't know why. And it's revenue limits and health insurance costs are the primary factors that I've seen in school districts. And when that information is played out before them and they see the cost impacts, it's not a magic or a bullet or a silver pill or whatever you want to call it. I think I got those backwards, but I did, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, it's basically starting that dialogue with them. And oftentimes you'll get creative solutions that come from the employees themselves. And I think that's where you get the dialogue going on this. It is a very emotional topic. It's very difficult. And sometimes, since I'm not a plan participant on your plan and they are, they may come back and say, I'd rather sacrifice salary dollars for the retention of that benefit. And that's something as board members, you know, we hear and you go from there with it to see how do we then fit that into our budget. But it's a dynamic process. But the main thing is to have discussion with it. And I've been focusing in on things to do with their employees, but there's also things that we do as an association, both legislatively, and as I mentioned with the meeting, we have Mr. Rainwater to talk about provider costs, which personally I think providers have gotten off pretty easy on this whole discussion about health insurance costs, keep on focusing on the employees and not talking about them. But it's a tax issue. It's a huge tax issue that they send you the bill and we don't have really much choice other than to pay it. But then that bill gets picked up by the taxpayers, or we go from there with it. So we're trying to address that topic as well.
And I think just to echo Bob's statements, where there have been major changes like Sun Prairie and Middleton that I've been, you know, pretty close to and have followed, the unions have been very motivated to change. So you really have to have both parties very motivated to change before a major change like this can take place.
Mr. Bing.
Going back to the wellness programs, how long does it take for a program to actually become and develop and it becomes a part of the contract from ideas to the initial contact with the union until it's actually signed and recognized by both parties? And also, I know that in the school district we have, well, take for example, energy saving policies where last year, I forgot the students that came before us and did a presentation on energy saving. Hawthorne.
And
yeah. In many ways, it's not insurance related, but also it's a things that the district do in order to cut down cost, and it doesn't involve the union. It doesn't involve staff. There's no recognized policy. It's things that the schools do individually. Have you ever, in terms of something similar to the wellness program, have we ever approached individual schools or the union to talk about something like this in the past? I mean, have individual schools done, you know, I know that individual schools, for example, one at Kennedy's, maybe twice, three times a year, my kids would bring home letters from the gym teachers that says, today is jump rope day. It's good for the heart. Come and participate or walk a mile a day. And I think our mayor sometimes goes out and walk a mile with the kids as a health promotion for that particular school. But have you ever done something that is similar to the wellness program with, as a part of the contract talk, or at least starting a conversation with the union at all?
Well, we've looked into some wellness programs. The problem that we always have is money, because they do cost some things up front, and then the benefits are not very quantifiable later on. I think, as Bob said, one of the school districts put this in. They really didn't see a decrease in their health insurance, but they did see a decrease in leave time. So it's really hard to quantify, and because of that, it's hard to justify spending that money, especially with a large district like us. I mean, some of the costs that I've seen, even the low-end costs, were $30 to $40 an employee. You know, multiply that by 5,000, you've got a pretty big investment without knowing if you're going to get a return on that. So, yeah, we've looked at them, but that's about as far as we've gotten with it, because of the cost.
Well, thank you. Is there any further advice or, you know, things that we should have asked you that we didn't?
No, I think you were very thorough, and I welcome you, or thank you once again for welcoming me in to talk to you about these issues. And I know they're difficult. I spend more time than I ever envisioned talking about this topic, but that's only because it has such a big impact on our operations.
Thank you. Remind the committee that last Monday in October, we'll meet again. If the members of the committee see that they want to make any particular recommendations based on this, we would do that then. Maybe you want to do that. It may be this is background information for you, period, for finance or negotiations, discussions, or other things farther down the line. But we will also take up the question of reviewing complaints about staff, parent complaints about staff at that meeting. Ms. Carstensen?
I was wondering if it might be helpful to ask Bob kind of to do either a grid or kind of a pro and con kind of issue of a number of things that we've already talked about in this, of, you know, maintaining status quo, what that means in terms of benefits, salary, pension, change, and what those things sort out, just as a sort of a crib sheet for ourselves to kind of boil down some of what gets covered here.
I'm not sure I understand what would be different from what the kind of information he's already presented.
Oh, it's all in here. I'm not saying it's different. No. I'm just saying pulling it out and so that it's all in one place, kind of just some of those pieces.
Okay, well, I think we could talk about it. We have your PowerPoint. We could talk about doing that. Sure. That wouldn't require us to make a recommendation and so forth as a committee. I just wanted to remind us that, you know, we may or we may not want to use this information as a committee. The rest of the board for being here. It's a difficult topic, an emotional topic, an important topic to our finances and what we can do for kids. So thank everybody for their attention. Number five, and thank you for your presentations. Other business, there is no other business. We're at the adjournment point.